But one day my grandpa was a visiting, and my mother took to spanking me for something other, who knows what, that day. Whatever it was, I forgot he was in the room. Grandpa was a sitting over there watching this development. When she got done with it and she turned around, I stuck my tongue out. And Grandpa saw it. And he said, "Wani," her name was Juanita, "Wani, get back in here. You didn't get the job done." Well, I looked over there at him so perturbed about that situation. And she began again. Well, I thought spanking was about who won. So whenever she got done with that round, well, here's what I did. I went right over to the closet. Because, you know, behind the closet door, nobody can see you stick your tongue out. Only Grandpa just moved the chair over to the door. And he was waiting on me. Now, in this closet, you have to understand this was a dirt floor farmhouse. And on that side of the closet was Mom and Dad's clothes. On this side was two of my siblings' clothes because three of us slept in the room with Mom and Dad. On the back of the door hung my clothes. And at the back of the closet was my dad's two pair of overalls. Only that day, only one pair was there because he's wearing the other pair. Now, that closet, it was summertime. And it didn't take long to get pretty swelteringly hot in the midst of all those clothes and overalls. And I'd heard this, and it was a creaking as he rocked in it. Wasn't pretty like this one. But I could hear that creak, creak, and I began to wonder. All the joy of sticking my tongue out was just evaporated. I was so put out with the whole situation, and I finally thought, well, let's just get it over with. So I came out. And he had his Bible. And I thought, is he going to whip me with that Bible? And he told me to sit down. And I did. And he began to give me this lesson. Now here we're going to go. Let me get all situated and see if we can make this thing work. Where'd that thing go? Now I'm technically challenged, gals. But my husband's not, and he fixed me a PowerPoint. Wait a minute, I don't have this thing on. We came from before the age of technical junk. But now, Papa, he got with the program, and I just tag along. Okay, I'm going to start this. Is that right? No? What do I do, guys? Okay, so now I come out of the closet. Wait a minute. Maybe I don't. It's not a doing. Okay, so I'm still in the closet for a minute here. It's awful hot. Look at there. Okay, so Grandpa says, "Little Debbie, who is God?" What a perplexing question for a gal who's waiting on her whooping. Who is God? Well, that kind of stood me back a minute. And I said, well, he made everything. Good answer. And he said, it's a little bit more than that, little Debbie. A little bit more than that. He told me the word aseity. Fancy word. It means God doesn't need us. He doesn't need us to worship Him. He doesn't need us. There's nothing we can do to help that entity. He has it all going on. And that's called aseity. There's a word for just about everything. We have to remember His goodness. You have these in a handout by your by. There's a scripture goes with each one of these, and Grandpa and I went to all of them, but we'll just put them up there for this minute. It's not a going. There it is. Okay, His graciousness. You know, that's a powerful, pretty word, isn't it? He is gracious to us. He's separate and apart, holy. Anything that's called holy, of course, means then you're setting it aside so that it remains special. Well, He's real special. Eminence. He didn't have to make His presence manifest for us, but He gave us clues everywhere so that we're without excuse if we don't seek Him. We have to know from the time we're little bitty that something made all this that we see. Transcendence. He's everywhere. He's inside of us as well as outside of us. He's in the heavens as well as He's down here on earth. He's even in the center of the earth. He's everywhere. He's transcendence. He's given me an awful lot of words to take in for an 8-year-old, but it was impressive, very impressive. His immutability, that means He doesn't change. There's a lot of folks think that God was a different God in the Old Testament to the New, but He didn't change. He never changes. He once is so perfect, there's no need for Him to change. He's always the same. You just got to understand what His plan is. Impeccability. Can't sin. He can't lie. You think somebody says there's nothing God cannot do. Well, that's just not right, because He can't do anything that's wrong. He can't be unjust, and He can't lie. Oh, look at those beautiful babies. Incorporeality. God is spirit, not flesh. Of course, that's pretty obvious to us. Incomprehensibility. Incomprehensibility. What is that, 7 or 8 syllables all there in that one? That's a big word. Did you ever think of the book of Job? Did y'all ever read that book in its fullness? Because Job is thinking that he's going to treat God as his equal a little bit. And God gets to telling him, where were you when all these things were done? And the magnificence of His creation is, we just can't comprehend it. Incomparability of His magnitude and magnificence. Come on now. His jealousy. Now, that's not jealousy like we mean. That would sound very human, wouldn't it? It means it's a form of the word that means it's not good for us to worship other entities. It's just stupid, okay? And so it means He's zealous. He's zealous for what would be good for us. And He doesn't want us to mess up time wasting worshiping things that we oughtn't be worshiping. So that's what's meant by jealousy, not the kind where a girlfriend is jealous of all the girls that get around her guy friend. You know, not like that. Love, and we're going to get into that here. Love, God is love now. We sang about that, didn't we? I'm going to give you all another song about that you'll like. Omnipotence. Huh, that's a fancy one. It means, well, he got it all going on. He can do it all. He can do anything. We can't, you know, Walt Disney, that is just, that Disney World, Disneyland, they're just amazing. what he came up with and the guys after him keep coming up with. That's amazing, the things that you can see there. But we as humans can only imagine as far as something we've experienced. We can't even draw an animal. You know, you saw Star Wars. But any creature they put on there that's supposed to be a new creature resembles something that already was. But he figured it all out before there was anything. You know, that's kind of what that means there. He's all powerful. He can do it all. His presence is everywhere. Am I going backwards? I think that's the thing. I'm pushing the wrong thing. Are y'all doing that there for me? Well, good. All right. I've been pushing the backward button the whole time. Impassibility. Yes. So he made us as good as we can be. These old decaying bodies of ours. But he surpasses that, of course. He's what we're going to be in the after a while. We're going to get there. It's just going to take a minute. I hope a few minutes. Infinity. What's that? He's infinite in all of his attributes. You know, about the time we'd done a bunch of these scriptures, I was getting kind of wondering if the whole Bible was going to be this kind of thing. Omniscience. He knows what you're thinking. He already knew what you were going to be thinking. He knows what you're going to be thinking tomorrow. He remembers everything you already thought. You can't play a match with a man. He's all knowing. Now we just don't know anybody like that. You know, even Satan, he's powerful, right? He can tempt you. And he's got his angels going about the world, but he can't read your mind. Did you ever think about that? He can't read your mind. He can only know once it gets out there. So I've learned over a period of time, if I've got a plan, I don't say it out loud. Well, think about it. Think about it. Why give him the advantage? Now, that one, I'm not sure I pronounce it right, but I always say omnipate. I don't know, but he's all wise. It sounds like sapient, doesn't it? Like we are homo sapiens, and that's omnisapient. I don't know. Pronounce it like you want. It'll be okay. Oneness. Yeah, we don't need two gods. It'll be fine. Well, come on. Righteousness? That's a good one. Aren't you glad our God is perfect? I mean, who wants to mess around with an imperfect one? If he's imperfect, I'd just give it all up. Why bother with but he's perfect. Okay. And his purity, that goes right along with it too. The point Grandpa is getting to is he's trying to help me get to know these attributes is that we can lean on this God. The trouble we got to know, his sovereignty, yeah, talk about kings, talk about all that. He is the man, well, the entity. He's the one. The thing we've got to know is that there's such a thing as God not hearing our prayers anymore. We can so sin that in his perfectness, in his purity, he cannot be with us. He cannot. It's impossible for him to come to us. So when you're living in sin and you're thriving in the sin and you're tempted by the sin, and you just don't want to repent from the sin, and then one day you need him, oh, whoops. He can't draw nigh. And then you say, there's not such a thing as a God because he didn't help me then. I think you better back up and take another look. Because he wanted to, but now he can't. Now you got to repent and get some good brethren like Job did for his friends to pray you back in to his circle. So you got to remember that. He has a limit. And we can get there if we just push him and push him and push him away. And then all of a sudden, when it's our time of need and we in our circle think we need him, don't be surprised if you don't hear an answer to that prayer. You better get where you're supposed to be and get it fixed. Right? Oh, aren't you glad he's patient with us? Oh. Y'all, I beat a trail to the front of my church building. When Frank Chesser goes to preaching, I know he's looking at me. He's bound to be. Seems like every... And if he talks about how our speech and our choice of words and how to become... I'm going down that. I'll move out of my way. Humility. Oh, for this magnificent majesty. Yet he's humble. He lets us draw near to him. He lets us worship him. Now, that's pretty nifty. Did my husband do a good job on all this? Kindness. Yeah, don't even need to say anything about it. If we don't know God's kindness, we haven't been where we're supposed to be. Wrathful. Watch out. Looky. I don't want to make him mad. And I don't want to face him if I've made him mad. You know, what do you think God thinks about us killing 50 million babies? Wrath is coming. Precious little babies in their mama's wombs, sleeping till they can come forth and ripped out of there just for our convenience. We mustn't make God angry and wrathful. But it's always just wrath. He gave us the way to be happy and peaceable and peaceful and fulfilled. And we just don't want to do it his way. We want to do it our own way. Veracity, that means truthful. My dad said to me one time, he was trying to learn some big fancy words, and he was always trying to challenge himself. And he had these words, he made them into a sentence. He said, "Don't have the audacity to dispute my veracity or even insinuate that I could prevaricate." Wow. He worked crossword puzzles too. Okay, now, with that in mind, Grandpa was saying to me, we have all these attributes of this wonderful Creator. He deemed that he would make the world and make the water and make everything perfect for human beings and the animals to survive. And then he created the ones down in the water and the ones up in the air, and he made these land animals. And then he brings us into there. And when it says, let's make him like us, that's Jesus talking with God. He was right there. And what he means by that is, but not like we look like him. Of course not. He's a spirit. It means we have the right of choice. You think about all these pretty little animals, but if you're going to raise a little dachshund, or we saw a bulldog this morning, pretty two bulldogs in the car. You know what every kind of dog is, what their tendencies are. We know which ones are good to be a watchdog. We know which ones are good to, you know, meet somebody at the door and be happy to see them. We know exactly what to expect on a kind of dog. But you don't know what to expect on a human being. Well, they just might do anything. They might go in the closet, stick the tongue out at the door, you know. But the thing is, that is what is like God. He has free choice, and He gave that beautiful thing to us. So we get to pick and choose when we're going to be naughty and when we're going to be nice. And one would hope we'd figure out why we ought to be nice most all of the time, which is what this story is about. I just cannot seem to keep that. I think my ear's too big. Okay, what does that say? Okay, yes. Did you ever think, let's take the Bible, right there, the whole Old Testament, the entirety of the Old Testament is to help us understand God. So if you want to know about all those attributes that we were just talking about, then all those stories of the Old Testament are going to get you to it. That each story is going to give you how God reacted and how man reacted to God, the counter part of it. And it's woven together to give you the full picture of God. That's what the Old Testament is about. Then the New Testament, oh, that's the plan. Now we're marching with the plan. The Old Testament alludes to it, but now it's a marching. All through the Gospels, right up to His death, the beauty of it. Then Acts is putting that plan into motion with the starting of His church. Then right after Acts, all those books up to Jude are what we're supposed to do in the church nowadays. It even applies to us. What's so cool about the Bible, it applied to them back there and it applies to us up here. Because in that sense, there's no new sin. Have you thought of that? I don't care what sin you can come up with. It already was. Somebody already did it. You can't be original with your sin because I guarantee there's somebody already did it. Well, all that in all those books, that's what those letters are for. And then Revelation is how you're going to die as a Christian. And that's the simplicity of the Bible. So instead of seeing it as this huge, overwhelming book of how you're going to get around in it, it's really just beautifully simple. Now we're going to even take it down some more. Or not. Those are examples. Y'all remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Isn't that fun to say? Say that three times real fast. Okay, now. This scripture is the next one he went to, because this is where he was honing in on God. What, honey? Is it? That's the one you sang, wasn't it? Did y'all at camp sing this song? Okay, y'all can help me, and then we're going to teach them this one. Beloved, let us love one another. Love is of God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. Now we're going to sing it. Y'all help me, okay? Beloved, let us love one another, for love is of God, and everyone that loveth is born of God and knoweth God. He that loveth not knoweth not God, for God is love. Beloved, let us love one another. 1 John 4:7-8. Did y'all like that? You did real good. You must have heard it somewhere. Did y'all already know that song? Okay. He was backing that up with the next verse. But there's a secret there. He said God is love. We just sang about it, right? But he wasn't done. He said, little Debbie, now what is love? Well, what does an 8-year-old know about that? You love your dolly, You love your doggy. You don't so much love the one that just spanked you. But you don't really fathom what love is when you're a child. You're just too immature. You just don't. So I gave a few foolish answers that seemed very profound to me. But he brought me to John 3:16 because he knew I'd memorized it. And he said, so say John 3:16. I go, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten Son, whosoever believed in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. He said, say it again. About the third time, I slowed it down, and he stopped me. He said, he so loved the world that he gave, and he stopped me. Stop. What'd you just say? He so loved the world that he gave. And he said, now what did he give? And I'm thinking, only begotten Son. And he goes, yeah, yeah. And that's not just a little thing. Because that was giving himself. It's a part of himself. It's the thing that we don't understand, the Trinity. You know, hard to get our minds around. But it was him. They were one. And he took part of himself and gave it to us. Now, did you ever think of the fact that that was God on earth for just a little while? For 30 years out of all the thousands of years. Ooh, wouldn't it have been something to live during those 30 years and actually see God on earth? They got to have him walk in their midst, talk to him, give them stories, counsel him. God on earth. He came from the throne up there. He could do anything, be anything, know everything. And he decided he'd come down and use a rock for a pillow, and get his feet dirty walking, be unappreciated, and then spat upon and crucified. And he knew we were going to do it, and he engulfed that into his plan. It was part of his plan, understanding that we wouldn't appreciate him and that we'd do that to him. It's not that he didn't know and he was just enduring. It's that he did know. He knew us so well, he knew we'd mess around and mess that up. And we would have too if we'd have been there. Now that's the thing that's hard to grip, is that we get to have all this circle of knowledge and we think we wouldn't have done that. Evidently, we would have. It was part of the plan, knowing how human beings are. That we just didn't appreciate God on earth. But the beauty of it is that he just put up with it. So part of his pain on the cross was not physical. It was emotional, spiritual. I mean, put yourself up there on the cross with him and see your friends all flee you. The ones that you'd kept close for your ministry 3 years. That you'd shared everything with. And they're scattered. Now you do understand that James and John were his first cousins. If you've ever read the fourfold gospel, it'll help you understand that. And that will help you to get a better picture in his three-year ministry. Whenever the mother of James and John came and said that she wanted her boys to sit on either side, that's his first cousins. She was making an appeal based on family. And of course, he said, you know, that earthly ties aren't anything. A lot of us have earthly ties that want to pull us away from God. But this is your family. This is your family right here. And I love the contour and texture of this group. I love how it's intertwined like God would have it be. It's beautiful. I so love it. And he does too. He made us all. Well, let's get on with this. That kind of giving that God gave is the one that we don't give like. When we give a Christmas present, we give according to how we appreciate that person. If we appreciate them, well, we're willing to sacrifice a little because they've been good to us. If someone hadn't been that, if they'd been a little uppity with us or something, you know, we don't want to give them a present, maybe. We kind of half-heartedly give them something. But he knew what we were going to do and did it for us anyway. That is completely just blinding yourself to the ridiculousness of our humanness and doing it anyway. That's selfless giving. Now that is some kind of beautiful. Okay, so now you've got God is that kind of giving that's selfless, and Satan is just the opposite. He's selfish. And to continue that comparison, now he had this on a piece of paper, and he had God equals love equals giving equals selfless. And then he put down at the bottom Satan. And Satan is hate. He's 180 degrees different, and he's taking. And if you think of the nature of Satan, it's just exactly right. He just takes and takes and takes. And then he put it in perspective this way. Okay. All of us are struggling in life. We certainly can't be completely selfless like God. But you know that you can't even match Satan. He'd been working on it for thousands of years. You can't even be as bad as Satan. So we got to be some place in the middle there. So, you know, when you think God can't forgive you, oh, well, think again. Because he sure can. And that's so wonderful. I just love that when I go marching down that aisle and sit down on the front, my brethren can pray for me and I can be okay again. It'll be just fine. These are the Ten Commandments, and I had memorized them when I was 8 years old, so I was able to rattle them off. I had a good Sunday school teacher. You remember, don't have any other gods before him. Now, don't you do it. No graven images. Don't take his name in vain. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Remember the Sabbath and honor your father and mother. Now, those five, they have something in common. He told me that, and I looked and looked. And just looked like a bunch of rules to me. Then now, come on down, you shall not murder, steal, covet. You don't want to commit adultery. You don't want to lie, bear false witness. Those five have something in common. I said, it's a bunch of don'ts. I was kind of precocious. Okay, he said, those first five, that's God to man. Now you're going to say, well, not honor your father and mother. Well, your father and mother are to teach you God on earth. That when they're teaching you rules, when they're teaching you discipline, when they're teaching you manners, when they're teaching you how to get along in this world, they're showing you God directly. That's exactly what he's doing. When they teach you to respect and honor them, they're teaching you how to do that to God. So if you're not teaching that to your children, you better get us started. They don't learn it on their own. The second ones, that's man to man. So he drew arrows, you see. The first set was man to God, and the second said that's man to man. Then he showed me, oh, by the way, I forgot to tell y'all something. When he had me do John 3:16, the reason he had me do John 3:16 is because he knew I'd memorized it. He'd already heard me saying it. But 1 John 4:7 and 8 that we sang, if you go on to verse 9, check it again, it's John 3:16 reworded. He could have just gone on down, but he wanted me to use the one that I'd memorized. Now, on these, he told me to go on to Matthew 22, and you can either go to Matthew 22 or I've got it here right for you. Papa did that for us. Here we go. One of them, a lawyer, you know those lawyers, they get on to things. He asked him a question, testing him. He had him up on the witness stand, you might say. Teacher, this tongue in cheek, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And Jesus said to him, love the Lord your God. You all heard that one, of course, with all your heart and soul and mind. And then liken to it. What that means, liken to it, that's equal, same as. Love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. Now that's pretty powerful. It sounds like he's just giving two commands and he's disregarding the Ten Commands. Not at all. Not at all. Because loving God and loving your neighbor, these the Bible law that all these hang on, come on now. Here we go. Okay. That, the first five, that's love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. The second five, that's love your neighbor as yourself. He was giving them the Ten Commandments. Boom, right like that. Oh, that's cool. I thought, wow, you know. So those Ten Commandments, you can sum them up. Now, then we got to figure out then what he means by that. This is a restatement of it in Romans, by the by. Papa threw that in for me. I'd never used that before. Owe no one anything except to love one another. For he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, this is the last five. Don't commit adultery, murder, don't steal, don't bear false witness, and don't covet. And if there's any other commandment, they're all summed up in this, namely saying, love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. That is so hard to do as human beings. So, it's real easy to love when you want to. It's the other one we have trouble with. When you got a whooping and you'd rather stick your tongue out. Love God. If we're going to love God, we must make absolutely certain that we conform ourselves to know how he said to love him. Now, if I'm going to give y'all a birthday party, wouldn't it be a good idea if I found out what you don't like and what you like? It'd be kind of disrespectful to do it the way I like things and my food that I like and my colors that I like. And I fix it all up and I say, don't you like it? Aren't you proud to be here? But it's all about me. So when we go to worship God and we think we're worshiping God, but we've planned how we're going to do that, there might be a little problem with respect. The only way we know how to approach the majesticness of God and humble ourselves is to put ourselves back out of the picture and find out what the Bible has to say about it and just forget about what we want. So if you got folks up here entertaining you and you feel like you want to clap and get into it, wait a minute. What we forget? We're thinking about ourselves here. We're not thinking about worshiping God. We're being entertained while you just well go to a rock concert. Right? What you think? Amen? The way we want what pleases us, what entertains us. That right there is we, us, us. That's just selfish. That's plumb selfish. And that just won't do. That just will not do. Not if we're going to bow ourselves. That can't go along with bow ourselves. The way he wants what pleases him, that's showing respect to him. And that's what it's about. People say, Church of Christ, y'all are just too rigid. We don't mean to be, right? We are trying to just do what he said. We're trying to just speak where the Bible speaks and be silent where it's silent. We mustn't forget that. We must not forget that. Come on now. This is love for God. Oh, look what he did there. Isn't that cool? I'm pretty proud of him. Okay, there it came. It was selfless. First step toward liberalism and apostasy for a church is minute changes in worship designed to please and entertain. Because any time we're entertained, that feeds into me, you know. And we need to come with our heads bowed, ready to open up the book. That is his way of communicating with us. And he specified exactly what he wanted. It'd be a good thing to figure that out and stay with it. Okay, going back to what thing Grandpa had there, there's another important point. Well, I'm just not getting it. Okay, here we go. Remember that. Okay, this is the one I want to hit for just a minute because I hear it every day, more than when I was a child. When I was a child, nobody took the Lord's name in vain. They just didn't. And now I hear it on the TV. I hear it in the grocery store. I hear it everywhere I go. Constant. It's in all the movies. And nobody thinks a thing about it. So I'm thinking maybe they don't know what they're doing. So let's stop a minute and think. Exodus 20:7. You shall not take the Lord your God's name in vain. For the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Well, that's a powerful one. You shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Now, whenever we speak his name lightly, we're not making it hallowed. The law is not made for a righteous person, but for the ungodly and for sinners and for the holy and profane. You know, that sounds like da-da-da-da-da-da-da until you stop and think about it. But all the laws of the land, all the laws everywhere, what's a stop sign for? If everybody in the world had the Christian attributes and we all were just like we ought to be to each other, you wouldn't even need a stop sign. In fact, you'd probably need somebody directing out there because everybody say, no, you first. No, you first. So then somebody'd have to be smart and say, now the ones on the right can go before the ones over here. And when it's a four-way stop, you can go at the same time because everybody wants to let you be first. But see, no, we got to have laws because we're all kind of naughty, right? And that's why you got to have those laws. You know. Something got to get a hold on me. Okay, Ephesians 4:29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good and necessary for edification. Ooh, that'd be so good if I could do it. That it may impart grace to the hearers. Mm-hmm. I want to do that, guys. I want to do that. I want to go to heaven. Y'all want to go to heaven with me? Ooh, wouldn't it be something if we meet up there again? I don't know, y'all. I'm going to try. So I'm going to beat a path every time I'm naughty again. Looking diligently, lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau. You know, when I read about Esau, I don't think of that as profanity, but that's what that word means. Let's look at it a little bit. Why was he a profane man? Because he treated something that should have been held in high regard with respect and careful consideration as if it was unimportant. You remember he came back from that hunting trip and he was more hungry than he was anything and just blew off his birthright to his twin brother. Okay, that was, the Bible calls, profane. He should have thought a minute before he did this, kind of not a good idea. Using euphemisms for God, some of those would be golly and gosh. I don't think anybody does that anymore. I think they just come right out with it. They don't bother to try to make it sound a little nice. The Webster's Dictionary, profane is irreverent to God and sacred things, secular and pure, and profanity is impiety, ill language. To violate, to pollute, to put wrong use, to misapply, to misuse anything that should be held in reverence. Okay? So then that's the dictionary proof of what we're trying to say here. But the most blatant, prominent misuse of God's name in American culture today is OMG and oh my. I don't even want to say it. I hear it. Do you hear it? All time, all time, all time. It's not even golly or gosh. It's plain out there, oh my. And I will see it, oh, I love those home improvement shows where they flip the house and all of a sudden it's gorgeous. And they all come in and they go, oh my. And I think, why in the world did you want to profane the Lord's name over a pretty room, right? If we're trying to not do that and get it out of our language, it's so offensive for somebody to just flippantly say it. It's bothersome. Imagine how God feels about that. He told us not to, and He told us so well. He told us so plain. And we mustn't overlook that in today's. I don't care who our friends are saying it. We must zip it. To use God's name as swear words in a manner that's not reverent. Now, he threw this next part in here. I was impressed. Wait a minute. God commands us to use His name properly. Never lightly or carelessly. It should be spoken in a great and serious manner with awe in the greatness of His majesty. We should never use any phrase or euphemism of the name of God that doesn't glorify, honor, respect Him. You know, we sing those songs about glorify. I can't think of the words, but you know the word. Anyway, he's talking about glorify His name. And then we turn around and say, OMG. Maybe not. Maybe that wouldn't be a good thing to do. You should not misuse the name of the Lord, for He will hold no one guiltless who misuses His name. Never use it carelessly. So evidently, this has been going on since Bible times, right? Again, not a new sin. It's just been going on. And we just kind of let it. It's been sliding. It's been sliding a little bit. So it's time for the Christians to lead the way back. It's time for us to step up and hold His name in reference. Do you think? You think? You think that'd be a good thing to do and not constantly disrespect Him? I mean, we want Him to draw near to us. So we better magnify Him so He will. Well, seems logical. Here we go. Okay, this is the part that Papa put in here. I had the other. Euphemism. See, my take on it is we don't bother with euphemisms anymore, so I still think it's good. It's fine. See, but golly, come on down to the next thing. It shows origin of golly is a euphemism for God. So that's what he's wanting you to see there. Gosh, same thing. Right, it's a euphemism for God. G. Euphemism for Jesus. Okay. I've harped on that enough. I think somewhere we stopped teaching it. Because I really think our youngsters are ignorant of it. I don't want to think anything else but that. I just think they just don't know any better. But you know, we can gently teach them. I say in my car, I teach GED in the projects. And I take folks lots of places. And I have the rule when they get in my car, don't take the Lord's name in vain. And then they'll come out with it when they're real excited about something and they're talking, and I'll say, did you know that you just took the Lord's name in vain? What? I don't think they know. So then it's got to be taught again. Got to be taught. Don't know any better. When we sacrifice and work for God and serving others, we're being complimented by God in that He allows us to experience who He is and represent Him intimately. He doesn't have to be worshipped by us. He doesn't have to be honored or respected. He doesn't need it. He allows it. He allows us to draw near to Him. Now that's just beautiful.